In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, January 17th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's actually 2013. And I've been doing that ever since the beginning of the year. I can't get out of the habit. It's industry chatter today in the 3 o'clock hour. And I'm happy to have Kim McCabe, President and Chief Executive Officer at ASI Government, as my guest today. Kim, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Happy to do it. And first of all, tell me what ASI Government does for your clients.
Sure. ASI Government is focused on acquisition support. So from mission needs and requirements through procurement and program execution, ASI really focus on helping clients harness the powerful but really underutilized levers that exist in the acquisition function, the process, the workforce, to cut costs and improve program and mission performance.
So give me an example of an underutilized lever.
Absolutely. So right now, we know about half the discretionary dollars are going through the acquisition process. About 30 cents on the dollar is currently in and around the acquisition function.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking for dollars in the time of fiscal crisis, it is a great place to find real money. And so we could be using that in a very strategic way. And so I think it's an underutilized lever in that way.
If it's not being done strategically, my fear is that then it's maybe haphazard is too strong of a word, but it strikes me as something where strategy should be pretty important, especially in a budget situation like we're in right now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. So, you know, I'm thinking of this in two ways right now. And the first thing I have to say is that I was lucky enough to be in public service for a few years, so I feel like I sat in the seat. And until then, and really now that I'm at ASI, I did not really fundamentally understand the context within which our public servants operate. The environment that they operate in is incredibly challenging. When they talk about it, if you haven't been in there, it's hard to really understand. These are very smart, capable, strategic people working in a very challenging environment and making an awful lot happen for this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's two ways I'm thinking about it right now. One is we have an immediate crisis that they're saying to us, we need help. We need help finding dollars right now in 13 and 14. Can you help us do that? And I look at that and I believe that that is really where they are. And so the near term thing for me and I think for industry is that we need to help them to do that. And there's a number of things in the acquisition function that we can do to make that happen that I think are strategic but are also going to help with the tactics in the near term. Things like contract closeouts, which I kind of think of as money in a box, spend analyses where you can really understand and reprioritize. Of course, strategic sourcing, but starting to look at strategic sourcing and categories. So not just sort of commodities, but what else can we source strategically? Thinking about enterprise spend management. And then, and this is one that's a little bit of a political hot potato, but I think it's really important to talk about, which is starting to renegotiate current contracts. So we know that the government has committed based on what they believed they had, and now we have new affordability. And so there's a conversation and hopefully a collaborative one between government and industry to look at problem solving, aligning those incentives, and being able to really get the most out of those contracts that we can and find some dollars.
Political correctness doesn't find its way onto this program very much, but I love the term new affordability. That's extremely diplomatic. I love that, Kim. A couple of things there I want to follow up on, but you mentioned about the concept of crisis mode. Do you believe that enough members of the vendor community and enough members of the federal community understand that that's really where we are? I mean, I've pointed out a number of times on the program, but I'm certainly not the expert on this issue. Are we there yet, do you think?
Yeah, I think that we all believe it at this point. I mean, much like all of my colleagues in industry and certainly those in government, we've been watching and waiting to see how it is that our friends in Congress are going to help us to solve this problem. And I think we realize that it's a collective national problem.
Yeah.
It really needs to be solved.
Well, and it's going to be a long wait, too.
It absolutely is. So I think we do believe that. And I think that the part of the strategic part, back to your point from earlier, is that in the crisis, we still have huge dollars to spend. And how we focus those is going to matter not just now, but where the watermark is at the end of the day. So going back to the 90s would be a real problem. Going back to sort of slashing the acquisition workforce, really not skilling the way we need to and thinking about what we're going to be buying in the future could mean that we're able to save some dollars now, but we find ourselves a couple years from now trying to figure out how to dig ourselves out of that hole. So this, the strategy around that, I think, is going to be very important.
One of the ways that I've seen that manifest itself is what the vendors that I talk to that do a lot of business at the Pentagon hear consistently. I hear from them about the LPTA contracts with not really a lot of consideration on life cycle costs or value, that kind of thing. And so I can see exactly what you're talking about manifesting itself in 3 to 5, 10 years, not just in big weapon systems, but in all kinds of services, procurements, and other places.
Yeah, LPTA is a tool, and there is a place for LPTA, I believe. It's just a question of whether or not we're using it appropriately, very much like we would use firm fixed price or T&M, you know, different types of acquisition, different acquisition types and different acquisition strategies. And I think, unfortunately, in part because of the demographics of the workforce, so the workforce demographic has changed really significantly. 10 years ago, only 6% of the acquisition workforce had less than 5 years' experience. Now 34%. So there's a lot of nuance to acquisition. And so getting those folks trained, feeling comfortable, giving them an opportunity to learn and be mentored into different ways to leverage acquisition types and contracts so they're using the right one for the right thing, I think is really important. Otherwise, we find ourselves, as you said, Francis, taking the wrong contract type and having solutions that we don't want and costs that we don't want.
And I want to be fair. I'm not picking on the Pentagon. They're not the only agency where that type of contracting is done. It just has a clever acronym that's primarily prevalent in DOD contracting. But I'm hearing instances, anecdotally, of course, but hearing instances of that happening at every agency across government. So it's not something that's limited just to DOD.
Even when it's not called LPTA.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Different names.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about strategic sourcing, and there seem to be two camps on strategic sourcing. There are a lot of folks that believe, as the administration believes, that there is a potential for a tremendous amount of savings. There's also a school of thought that agencies, while they do very similar things, don't do quite the same things often enough to realize a dramatic amount of savings through strategic sourcing, and it's also difficult to apply it to the services area. Where do you fall on that? Or maybe there's a third way to look at it also.
I think strategic sourcing is part of a broader concept that we talk about as enterprise spend management. And so I really do believe that the agencies have done quite a good job of trying to initiate and utilize strategic sourcing methods already within their agencies. It's the cross-agency that's really challenging. And that's true generally to work across agencies because of what you described in terms of the differences of what they do in mission and policies and so forth. I think that there is a real opportunity to do that. I'd like to see them do that within the broader context of enterprise spend management so they're really doing it strategically. They've got metrics, people to inform their decision-making and inform their results.
So would it be fair then to call strategic sourcing maybe a kind of silo in that broader concept of spend management that you're talking about?
Yeah, I see it as a tool, as one of the methods. And as I think about ways that we can be strategic as we enter this time, I really sort of see three different buckets. One is the workforce. One is these methods. Strategic sourcing is an example, but agile acquisition for IT, like buying cloud, buying data, buying cyber, for example, would be another. And then the third is really having acquisition IT that would allow them to be more efficient and effective, to support the workforce, to bring data and information to make decisions and so forth. So I think that's one of the tools that we look at.
That's interesting that you say that, because if I've talked about big data once in the last month, I've talked about it 1,000 times, and yet I don't think I've heard about a concept like you're proposing of applying big data to actually what we're doing to get the tools to manage big data and everything else that the government does. What does that model look like, do you think?
So there's two parts to this. One is how to buy it, right? So right now we have a lot of capability around big data. A lot of it's, of course, in the intelligence community, certainly the private sector. A lot of our agencies are using it. But we don't have a great way of buying big data, just like we don't have a great way and a rapid way of buying cloud or other things, cyber. And so there's that question. The other question is, how do we use the data to drive acquisition decisions? And certainly Joe Jordan has talked about this and others around how is it that we take this data and put it into a tool that allows us to support decision making. There is a, as you know, there's a tremendous amount of data in government that we could utilize to support our decisions, especially now, especially during this sort of financial crisis, so that we can improve our decision making.
Let's talk more about that. I have to take a break, but let's leave it there and come back and talk more about how agencies are trying to sort through all of this stuff. When we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose, Kim McCabe of ASI Government, my guest on Industry Chatter, back in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Computing in the office or on the go. The TacLane Multibook from General Dynamics delivers defense-grade security integrated into a Dell laptop. For the first time, you can simultaneously connect to secure and unsecure networks, even Skype with your friends and family from anywhere, anytime. Ideal for today's government workforce, the NSA-certified TacLane Multibook Secure Laptop keeps you mobile, connected, and protected. To learn more, visit www.gdc4s.com/multibook.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
The Bible says the borrower is slave to the lender. In other words, when you owe people money, they own you. So are you tired of being a slave to your mortgage and all your other debts? Just think, a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest, and the banks get it all. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. I've shown over 2 million people how to eliminate their debts, including their mortgage, credit card debts, car payments, and student loans. And now I want to show you. So let me rush you a free copy of the Debt-Free Bible. Just call 1-800-400-8380. You'll discover powerful debt-eliminating secrets that will help you break free from being a slave to your debts. The truth is, you can get out of debt, no matter how much money you owe or how much money you make. For a free copy of the Debt-Free Bible, call now while a limited number of copies are still available. Call 1-800-400-8380. For your Debt-Free Bible, call 1-800-400-8380.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says rural America is becoming less relevant. But what is USDA doing to change that? I'm Emily Kopp. We'll find out on Friday's Federal Drive. And we'll look at We the People, where the people file online petitions asking the White House to do all sorts of things. But is the government listening? It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kim McCabe of ASI Government, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We're talking a little bit about big data, Kim, and applying that specifically to acquisition. And it strikes me that one of the things that agencies are struggling with about big data that's different than other IT challenges that we've experienced over the past, you know, half decade to decade in the federal government, is the roadblock to success with big data right now seems to be understanding what's in there from a conceptual standpoint. Not does this box connect to this cord and all of the technical stuff. It's more conceptual. There's a lot of information, and what ideas can I think of to do something with this data and make it valuable to me and my organization, rather than can we get a partner in industry to show us how this technology works and then plug it in and do something with it. Am I on track there, do you think?
Yeah, I think particularly from a performance perspective. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're thinking about it in terms of performance management and leveraging all this data, you have to know what it is you want to know. So you have to start with, it's a thought piece, to start with, what is it I need to understand? What decisions do I have to make? And back your way into the data, because you can use the data, you know, formulaically to try to understand and then dig further and further. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about analytics, is they bring up new questions. Then you have more data, more analytics, more questions, more data. So having that data there and being able to use those analytics to drive those questions allows us to become smarter about what we're doing. But it takes that strategic thought at the front end to start asking those initial questions. And that is very, very hard work, particularly if you're the head of an agency and you're in the midst of the crisis that we're talking about, being able to take that time out. And then, as you said, I think data sharing is another one. Data sharing is very, very challenging. So it is certainly a source of power. And, you know, folks also want to make sure that the data is understood in the right way based on where they sit, and based on where you sit, it has implications. And so when you have data systems and you want to pull them together, even if you could technically, you want to make sure that you're able to you know, have the folks working together collaboratively so that you can do those analytics. Now, my experience is that just from a functional perspective, that has been one of the biggest challenges, is getting the folks together willing to share that data and willing to come up with, where do we start, what is it we want to know, and then how do we leverage the data to be able to do it? Because we certainly have the power in terms of the technical capabilities.
I hear a couple of points there of dissonance that are all cultural, don't have anything to do with the technology. One of them is the sharing, this is the very basic idea of the sharing of the information, because the nature of government historically is, I have this and I'm going to keep it, because, as you said, that's where your power comes from, the information that you have, not the information that you give away. The implication has always been, if I give it away, then it's not mine anymore, and I lose that control. So changing that dynamic strikes me as particularly difficult. The other one that I wonder about, too, is the concept of just drawing those questions out from the very beginning and taking the time, as you said, in the middle of a crisis. That seems to be the hardest point, because people don't really seem to have the time to be able to just step away and think conceptually. You're triaging pretty much all the time, it strikes me.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think we are, and I've heard other guests say this, that I think we are at a time where we don't have the luxury to not do it, because we're going to make very strategic, or need to make very strategic choices. We're going to be making choices about what we do, whether we make them deliberately or not. The question is, where do we land at the end of that? What do we have to work with? What is that watermark at the end of the day? So if we don't take the time to ask those hard questions, and from an acquisition, since we're an acquisition support company, from an acquisition, big acquisition perspective, so finance, programs, procurement, from that standpoint, needs to be aligned to mission needs. They need to have a seat at that table, be positioned to have the conversation to ensure that the information they're gathering allows not just them, but the agency broadly to make really good decisions, because there's so much real money and real impact around acquisition on results. And so I think that it really is a time, and I unfortunately, that we have to take a little bit of time to think about what information is going to allow us to make those decisions now and in the future more effectively.
Who do you think should be the point person at each of these agencies, and then within the companies that you work with, to help those point people in the agencies to take that time, step back, and figure this stuff out? Is it just at the CAO level, or is it someplace else, or all over the place?
I really believe this is not it. We have to eliminate the lanes. We have got to bridge the gap. We've got to start getting these folks together. And I really see government doing a much better job of this. They're doing it at the program level with the IPTs, and they've done that in DOD, for years and years. But we're seeing more of this conversation about, we recognize that this is a value chain, that we have one common goal, that we sit in different places along this value chain, and that we need to work together. So I actually think it is the folks across the value chain, but it has to be very senior people. I mean, as you know, cultural change, to start cultural change, there are two very critical things, championship and incentives. If you don't have championship and incentives, everything else is harder because you're fighting organizational gravity. And so I think that at this point, if we can have those folks get together at the most senior levels of the organization, I'm talking at the secretary level and then his direct reports, to sit down and talk about this, and then functionally for them to work together against those mission results, that we'll find a much better decision about what data we need, how we share that data, and what results we get at the end of the day.
You do understand that you're championing a pretty broad blurring of the lines at least conceptually. At the tops of these agencies?
Certainly not in terms of decision authority,
right,
but absolutely in terms of collaboration. And where that's happened, we've seen really great results. So where these agencies are getting, folks are getting together and having these conversations, we're seeing that they're really doing great things. So I spent a little bit of time at the Army, and the Army does really quite a very good job, especially around IT decision making, where it's clear what the lines of authority are, where the secretary has given particular authority to a particular assistant or secretary, mm-hmm. but they do come together to have conversations about mission needs and how they're going to carry that out. So we do see agencies that do quite a good job of this.
All of this is great, and understanding that what's available, let's say we manage to get that knocked out. How do then we apply the information that we have that's available and really then use it to make acquisition work better for the agencies using this acquisition IT context that you're talking about?
So I think that once you have the information, you understand what decisions you want to make. So let's talk broadly about acquisition. So what is it from a requirements perspective, from a mission needs perspective, that's going to have the greatest impact? Right, and just to back up a little bit, right now is one of the hard things is that it's really going to be about prioritization and leadership. And it's a very hard time to do that. And prioritization is difficult anyway, especially coming out of a very flush time. So I think that we're at a time now, though, where everyone recognizes, for your first question, how critical this is. So I think the folks who are starting to get together, our senior leaders, and really even many layers below them, are starting to have conversations about what is it that is going to have the greatest impact here on mission. So if we can start to create those, the way we used to talk about it was cascading scorecards, and to understand what is it that's going to allow us to know what results we're trying to achieve, and then how are we going to know what those results are as we go? So we're not just measuring or just looking at the transactional data around acquisition, but rather about the results of acquisition, not how many, but how well, not how much, right? So it's really a shift in the way that we look at this data and that we use the data to drive conversations about the prioritization so that the leaders can create guidance that the folks within the agencies can then follow. Young workforce, but a very capable, you know, in terms of they're very energetic, they really care about mission, but they need that guidance and those priorities.
Let's talk about the workforce some more when we come back. You gave me 3 points earlier in the program, acquisition IT is one and workforce is another. So let's cover that in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kim McCabe of ASI Government, my guest today on Industry Chatter, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
Leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Federal employees receive 15% off select Sprint monthly services and for a limited time may be eligible to receive a $50 service credit when they switch a line to Sprint. Visit a Sprint retail store in your area and mention where you work to find out if you are eligible, or visit Sprint.com/Fed. That's Sprint.com/FED.
Coverage not available everywhere ends 4/10/13, subject to 2-year agreement, activation and early termination fees and other restrictions. Service credit will be credited within 3 invoices. Restrictions apply.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta told reporters in Italy, Americans are among the hostages that were taken in a terrorist attack in Algeria. a militant group claimed responsibility and says it's holding seven Americans. But State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland would not provide details to protect those who were kidnapped. The militants claim they attacked an oil field owned and operated by British Petroleum. I'm J.J. Green.
Sir, we have multiple contacts bearing 050 at 30 miles.
When the Navy and Coast Guard needed a radar to perform critical missions, they chose the TRS-3D radar from EADS North America. Built to cut through clutter in a busy coastal environment, the TRS-3D detects multiple surface and air threats simultaneously, so our nation's defenders can respond quickly and keep us safe.
Sir, estimated intercept time is 2 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Flu season is here. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS Health Beat. It's not the season of joy, for sure, but we are now in the season of flu. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention tracks the numbers. At the CDC, Dr. Joe Brzee.
This season, we've already seen a lot of flu in the country, making it an especially early start to the flu season.
But Brzee says there's still time for people to get a flu vaccination.
While it's too early to tell how severe or how long the flu season will be at this point, if you haven't already received your 2012-13 flu vaccine, you should do it now to protect you and your family. It's not too late, even if your community has already had flu outbreaks.
Vaccination is the most certain protection, but you can reduce your risk of picking up or spreading the flu by such things as frequent hand washing, covering your cough, or staying home when you're sick. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for January is the Literacy Lab, a local nonprofit that's closing the achievement gap by providing 300 low-income children with individualized reading instruction, getting them up to grade level, and ensuring they can succeed in school. The Literacy Lab's trained instructors work closely with schools to diagnose reading difficulties and missing foundational pieces of phonics, fluency, and comprehension. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kim McCabe's President, Chief Executive Officer of ASI Government, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked about acquisition IT as one of the 3 points that you talked about as being really critical in this area. Another one of them is workforce. This is something you and I've talked about before, and you're very passionate about this. Tell me the number again that you told me off the air about where the acquisition workforce has been historically, experience-wise, and where it is today.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of really interesting demographics around this particular workforce. And I don't want this to come across as negative because I actually see this as a tremendous opportunity. So the way that the workforce in acquisition looks right now is that in the last 10 years, we've gone from 6% of the workforce having 5 or less years experience to 34%, and that's from the Washington Post. In addition to that, adding to this issue, though, is that the level just above that, that mid-level manager, we've seen a lot of those folks vacate the market, the federal market, and come to private sector companies or go to do other things. And the folks who are there, who are very capable, who have more than 5 years experience, who could be mentoring, are extremely busy with the current workload. So you have a very junior workforce, that, and a lot of them interns, who don't have mentors. They don't have that scar tissue. And although a lot of this is sort of repeatable, you know, there's a lot of nuance to the way that acquisition is done. What I hear from, we have about 130 clients, and I've spent a lot of time with our clients trying to understand what they need. And one of the things that I hear a lot is, you know, what we need most are some of the skills we don't train for. And you really have to get by being an acquisition professional for a long time. You don't get it in the first 5 years. Things like negotiation, having critical thinking skills, problem solving skills, writing skills are extremely critical, and you don't get that through the typical certifications. You get that over time by knowing how to ask the right questions. You get that through mentoring. But that mid-level is gone for the most part, or extremely busy. So these folks they're not getting it through the certification and standard training now. They're also not able to get it through the mentoring, even though I think a lot of the agencies, DHS is a great example. Nick Nyack is doing a fabulous job of training and development. But it's just hard to do that with the workforce that we have and the ways we train. But there are different ways to do this. We have some wonderful high-tech ways to train. We have Intel customers who are doing virtualization, you know, virtual worlds. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of really interesting ways to do that to help this new demographic.
Why is that an opportunity, especially when you give me the numbers? Now, some of your explanation there I understood. I could start to see the opportunity through the trees. But when you give me that number, I think a lot of inexperience, and as you say, they're doing terrific things based on what they're able to do at the present time. But why is this an opportunity?
It's a great question. The same reason a BRAC is a great opportunity. Because when you're going to lose that much of your workforce, or you have that junior of a workforce, you can train them to do something wholly different than they've done before. So BRAC is incredibly difficult. You only maintain about 29% of your civilian workforce in a BRAC is sort of historically what you see. So it's very difficult, and it's expensive and challenging. But one of the wonderful things about it is you can do things completely differently. We have an opportunity right now with this crisis, or the stars are aligning. If we can be strategic about who we hire, who we keep, with what skill sets, the way that we train them and so forth, to really do things fundamentally differently. And coming back to the last segment, Francis, I think to be able to have different functions working together is part of that. Having acquisition at the table strategically is part of that. So I think we have an opportunity with this young workforce to give them new tools and to have a different way of doing it. So it's not the numbers that we're looking at, how many folks do we have, but who doing what with what skills.
I talked to a veteran of this business just today at the Affirm lunch about this same issue, and this person said essentially the same thing. And his response to the opportunity question was, it's a chance to get rid of we've always done it this way, people.
I think that's true, and also just for us to give them new ways and new tools, because one of the reasons why they do that is because it's a compliance-based mm-hmm. function, and it's needed to be that. But we can look at that differently and be more of a customer service-oriented. And I think part of that actually comes back to the training conversation. So having a conversation earlier today about where innovation comes from, which is something I'm very passionate about. And what we find in the world generally is that innovation comes from interdisciplinary study. It doesn't typically come from within a stovepipe. So you apply the hard sciences to the social sciences, for example, and you find an aha. And so this is an example where if we can take the folks who are in procurement and in each one of these acquisition functions, big A acquisition functions, and have them learn the adjacent capabilities and sort of fields of study and apply that we may find that there are new ways of doing things together and in a more customer service way.
Mm-hmm. These things will work well if the agencies are able to devote the resources and the strategy application to that kind of thought process. Are you optimistic, pessimistic, or neutral that can happen in the environment that we're living in now, where training and strategy are some of the resources, both time and money-wise, that disappear first?
I think it depends on a few things. I think if sequestration kicks in, it's going to be harder because of the way the cuts are going to happen. I really believe that it also depends agency by agency. There are agencies we've seen folks who are leading these agencies who are very innovative. I mentioned Nick Nyack before as an example. Melissa Starinsky, who's now going over to VAAA, is another example of that. Elliot Branch is another example of that. So we see lots of customers who are truly innovative and want to take the time. They think very strategically. These are very smart, capable, experienced individuals who understand the environment, and they want to be strategic. Some of this depends on how this unfolds. In other cases, I think they don't have either they may not have the experience, or they may not have the leeway. I'm hoping that the agencies will give our acquisition professionals the opportunity to be innovative and to take the time to think, because the agencies and departments will be benefited from that in the long run.
You've cited enough examples, though, for me, not just names, but concepts that it strikes me that there's not really an excuse if an agency decides they want to try to be innovative in this particular workforce area that we're talking about. They don't have to use the resources excuse or the time excuse if they don't want to, that they can really put nose to the grind. And it's going to be hard work. I'm not suggesting it's going to be simple. I'm just suggesting that it can happen because it is happening other places.
I think that's true where they're being given a seat at the table. Hmm. I think that when you have department or agency leaders that look at acquisition and see it as a strategic function top to bottom, not just the senior leaders who I've cited, but all the way down the chain, and they're able to say, you can make a difference contract by contract. Let's really think big ones and small ones. Let's really think strategically, which may mean that folks have to take a little bit of risk. And they have to be given a little bit of leeway, not to go outside the regulations and the law. That's not what I'm talking about. What I am saying is that given some top cover, some leadership, championship from the top, support from the top, I'm talking about of the agency, not just the acquisition function, but also that, of course, that top to bottom, these folks with a seat at the table and a little bit of leeway can be very strategic.
Kim McCabe's the president and CEO of ASI Government, my guest today on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment to continue this conversation.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
What is the current state of morale in the federal workforce? Is it better or worse than it was a year ago? Federal News Radio is looking for your thoughts on morale in the federal government. Take our survey and tell us what you think are the biggest contributing factors to positive and negative morale. Do agency leaders have the tools they need to fix morale problems? Results of the survey will be included as part of a Federal News Radio special report in February. Find the survey at federalnewsradio.com. Search survey.
The power of the executive branch is vested in the President of the United States. On Monday, January 21st, President Barack Obama takes his second oath of office as head of state and commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Federal News Radio is your source for comprehensive coverage of the 57th presidential inauguration. Tune in to 1500 AM Monday morning at 11 for live coverage from Capitol Hill and updates on the inaugural parade. You can also go to federalnewsradio.com and click on Listen.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Back at In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Kim McCabe of ASI Government. And the third on your list of items after acquisition IT and workforce, I wrote down methods. And flesh that out for me and explain to me what in particular you're referring to and why you think this is so critical, Kim.
Sure. And some of this relates back to the last segment, to your question a moment ago. So we talked about strategic sourcing. I think strategic sourcing is actually a really good example. So this is actually not a new idea. I mean, this is a conversation we've been having for, you know, closing in on 20 years now. But it's a challenging method to implement for a number of reasons. We're now seeing, though, that a number of agencies are doing it. So I think that's a great example. And if we come back to the maturity of it, there's an opportunity for us to mature strategic sourcing as a method to try to find both ways to save the costs and get better pricing and to leverage our buying power and also to get better results. Another example that I'll bring up is using the same methods that we're using in IT to do agile development in the acquisition community. So we are doing quite a bit of that now with our clients because the acquisition community is a little bit behind the IT community in terms of using those methods. So if you're going to do IT development, you need to have a way to buy it that way. And when we talked about big data before, I think that big data, buying cloud, buying cyber, and cyber is a really important one because we're obviously going to see a lot of funds move over to the mission support side, a lot of concerns about what's happening in terms of the cyber. And it's an emerging area for us in government broadly, how we're going to deal with the cyber threats. So how to buy cyber and how to buy it in an agile way, I think, is a really important conversation for us to have. And it's an emerging area, just like strategic sourcing. I think some of the thought work around strategic sourcing for services, for example, is something that we need to have that conversation across government and industry lines. So I think that those are examples of the types of methods we can start to use.
Now, when we talk about the term that I hear tied most closely to strategic sourcing, which is hard for me to say for some reason, is commoditization. A lot of people are afraid that if strategic sourcing becomes as prominent as some people think it should be or would like it to be, that it's going to result in commoditization of all of these services that companies are providing. It's going to be real difficult for companies to try to get a competitive edge because they're going to, it's going to essentially come down to selling on price. And I wonder if you see some room in the concept of strategic sourcing for that competitive edge, especially we talked earlier about LPTA and the Pentagon and how that concept is showing up in other agencies. And it's unfortunate to say, but I think any agency leader who's honest is saying, look, that's what we're really pushed on right now because of where we are budget wise.
Right. And there's a lot in what you just said. There's a lot in there. And that was a very rich topic. I think in terms of strategic sourcing, the first part of what you said, I think that there is room. I think that one of the concerns is that sometimes what we see is that a concept is applied inappropriately. So you take the way that you're buying commodities in terms of strategic sourcing, pencils and so forth, and you apply it to professional services, it's a completely different model when you're buying services than when you're buying commodities. And so I think part of the conversation is and should be, what is the right model for sourcing? How do we leverage the government's buying power when you're buying services? So if you're buying, acquisition strategy is a great example. So you have a lot of agencies that are looking to do new and innovative things in terms of acquisition strategy. It's a service, but a lot of them are doing it. Can we put together a method by which they could buy commonly so they get better pricing? So how do they do that? So I think there is room. And again, I think it comes back to the last segment or two that we've talked about. How is it that we get folks to think strategically? And the other part that I haven't hit on, but I've said it a few times, is and doing it together, working across government industry lines so that we can help form that solution together so that there's aligned incentives and we're working together toward that end.
That's been probably of all the concepts that we've talked about on this program today. That's the hardest nut to crack, though, isn't it?
I absolutely think it is. And I think part of it is that we've lost trust over the last decade or 15 years. It didn't used to be this way. We used to work closely together. And at an individual level, we see that a lot. And we see a lot of staff augmentation where staffs are really, they're intermingling. But I do think that there's a lack of trust. And I think it's also the reason that LPTA is happening. They just don't see a difference. They don't believe that the industry is coming to them with the best ideas and with fair pricing. And so I think there's a bit of trust building to do. But I think that, again, this is an opportunity for us in that way that we can use this crisis to come together to do some problem solving and also to come up with new innovations.
And it seems to me that when you look at any kind of a trust relationship and you try to analyze it, figure out if it's in the case of this one where it's gone a little bit wrong, people, the default mode of human nature is to try to figure out whose fault it is. And it seems to me that right now that's the least constructive thing that especially industry can do. And the most constructive thing that industry can do is say, we're going to take it upon ourselves to fix it for two reasons. It's good for the country, but it's also good for our company if we develop that line of trust with our customer and we can go back to them and understand, and they understand that when we tell them something, they can bank it.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. And I think that we're getting a lot of help from OFPP on this. And we talked a little bit during the break about Mythbusters as an example. And I think that there is a move to try to bring industry and government closer together. I've had many conversations with DHS where they've talked about how is they we can build industry-government communications around procurements and more broadly. So I think folks are open to it. Again, this crisis is opening up lines of communication that we might not otherwise because we're trying to find solutions. But I also agree that we as industry, we really need to come to the table and say, hey, let's put everything behind us. Let's figure out how we can help. Let's take it on ourselves that whatever has happened in the past, we can come to the table now and let's work together to try to find a solution to this crisis.
Yeah, that seems to be, I really think that's the right place for that to be because it doesn't matter how we got to where we are today, but it doesn't strike me as the agency's or the government's role to try to make the first move there.
I completely agree with that. And I also, I do hope, though, that the agencies will, with open arms, accept the opportunity that would be presented to them by industry coming forward to say, let's work together to try to find. And again, it's the innovation side where we're working together to try to figure out how do we do this better? What are the opportunities we have from a process perspective as well as from a product perspective to do these things? And how can we get to that price? How do we get to the right price for you? Because it's got to be both. If the government comes forward, let's take renegotiation as an example. If the government comes forward and simply dictates a price, the chance that their industry, quote, partner is going to actually be that is very low. Whereas if they come forward and say, here's where I have to be, let's figure out taking your current contract, what we can do to try to get there, let's be creative. And some of that may be taking prices down, and some of it may be scope and other things. There's an opportunity to come together and then move forward together as you would. As you said, it's a cultural to change. It's a human issue. And I think that there's a better chance of us being able to both get to the solution and then move forward effectively together.
Kim McCabe's my guest. She's the president and CEO of ASI Government. We're almost out of time. We'll come back and wrap up in just a moment with a couple of closing thoughts on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
The Thrift Savings Plan, the retirement program for federal employees, is made up of 10 different funds. But what exactly are they? The C fund includes stocks matching the S&P 500, and the S matches the Dow Jones. The F fund is made of bonds, while the I fund includes international stocks. The G fund, government securities. The final five, the L funds, include varying mixes of the F, C, I, S, and G funds, all based on a person's expected retirement date.
Does your spouse need additional or less expensive life insurance coverage? WEPA's Associate Member Program allows spouses of civilian federal employees to become associate members and apply for coverage up to $750,000. And the good news is that you, as the federal employee, are not required to purchase any insurance, and your spouse does not need to be a federal employee. To learn more, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
This is an urgent message for all individuals with extremely large credit card debt. No matter how much you owe on your credit cards, the company that has settled more debt than anyone in the U.S. could settle your debt too. While you make one low monthly program payment, you have the opportunity to hear how low your monthly program payment could be for free. This free information is available now simply by calling Freedom Debt Relief at 1-800-700-6518. I repeat, if you have extremely large credit card debt, you now have the ability to reduce your total debt and get one simple low monthly program payment. This could allow you to resolve your debt faster than you ever thought possible. But you should act quickly. Call Freedom Debt Relief now to learn how much you could save. 1-800-700-6518. Again, this life-changing information is available for free. To find out how much you may be able to save, call today. 1-800-700-6518. That's 1-800-700-6518. 1-800-700-6518.
Come back to Foggy Bottom for homecoming at the George Washington University on February 9th and 10th in 2013. Join GW Men's Basketball on Saturday, February 9th, when they take on the Butler Bulldogs and commemorate the 20th anniversary of their trip to the Sweet 16. The GW Women play Butler on Sunday and celebrate the 40th anniversary of Title IX. Visit gwsports.com/homecoming and get your homecoming tickets today.
The Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Conference is coming February 12th and 13th to the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC is the training event for developing and training government financial professionals to excel as leaders in today's competitive government market. Don't miss this opportunity to share best practices, to find solutions to shared challenges, to network with your peers, and to learn from the top financial management leaders and industry experts. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Just a couple of minutes left with Kim McCabe of ASI Government. A terrific conversation. Thanks very much for being here
today.
I've really enjoyed it. We've talked about a lot of really complex topics today and a lot of things that they have a lot of texture to them. Give me a couple of thoughts to wrap up of some action items that you think agencies could do immediately and that your colleagues in industry could do immediately to push toward this vision that you've kind of laid out today.
So on the industry side, I'm only going to talk about us because I'll tell you how I want us to approach it, and I hope that it'll resonate with my colleagues. The environment that our government clients are working on right now is very, very challenging, and we need to believe their experience and listen and help them in 13 and 14 to find dollars in any way that we can. So I hope that, you know, we as a company and our colleagues will do that first. That is the first order of business, help them to execute on mission in 13 and 14. I think for the agencies, I hope that they will be strategic. I hope there's so much money to spend, and spending it in the right way is so important. Focusing on the workforce, thinking about really doing human capital planning, positioning the workforce, training so that we have the right skills, critical thinking and negotiating, using new methods, and thinking about how to get IT to support that workforce, especially if it's going to be smaller. I think being strategic about that will make sure, again, that that watermark is higher so that at the end of the day, we can come out and continue to deliver on the incredibly important missions that these agencies deliver on.
There's about a million more things we could talk about, Kim, and we're just completely out of time, but I appreciate you coming in today.
Thanks, Francis. I really enjoyed it.
Kim McCabe's the President and CEO of ASI Government, my guest today on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll archive this conversation, but you can hear it later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.